This is Wake Up Call,
another kind of daytime radio program.
A Gal Media property. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Wake up!
You know, we were talking earlier about whether or not sports needs the roar of the crowd. We're not going to get it in a lot of scenarios if sports does come back. We probably will be playing in empty arenas, empty baseball diamonds, right? Places like that. But there is one place where I'm going to miss the roar of the crowd, or sort of the boos and the unspectacular moans. And that is going to be a week from today at the NFL draft. I have grown to love the traveling roadshow that has been the NFL draft over the last couple of years. I enjoy the NFL conference of fans, the gathering of everybody who makes a pilgrimage to whatever city is hosting this thing. I've enjoyed it. It is a neat spectacle. I was going through my phone the other day cleaning out some pictures, and I still have shots in Nashville from the stage last year, and just this ocean of people that had gathered from everywhere around the country to root on their team, to see the different segments of fan bases who came together, all decked out in the team colors. There is a coolness to that. There's an aspect of that that I'm going to miss a week from today when we're doing it in basements and we're doing it by Zoom and we're doing it by conference call and all that other stuff. However it's been going to be put together, I'm still glad we're getting the draft. I'm still glad we're going to have content. We're going to analyze who moved up in the draft, which quarterback was taken ahead of which other quarterback, how deep is the wide receiver class, you know, Joe Burrow going number one, how much of an impact will he have with the Bengals, can he turn the team around, all of the stuff that you'll get from analyzing the first round. But missing is the celebration of the sport. It was almost, again, It was like a gathering of fans, like a conference. Like if you have like a conference of dentists in Las Vegas and everybody who's a dentist just gathers to Vegas for all this. It's like that was what it was in all these cities. It was just people would go to the cities just to go, I'm just going to be a part of it. I'm going to wear my Steelers shirt or my Patriots jersey or my Chargers hat and my Buffalo Bills gear. And I'm just going to go and just enjoy it and love it and be part of it. That's, you know. And I'm going to miss it. We're going to talk about the draft coming up, who might move up to get who coming up next. A big question mark for the Dolphins, who have three first-round picks coming up in a week from today.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, 1987 is when we go back on Throwback Thursday. On this date, Michael Jordan became the second player in the NBA history at that time to score over 3,000 points in a season. And we've been talking about his documentary, the Bulls' final season, and a lot of other goodies in an eight-part documentary that's going to start Sunday on ESPN. Like Ron said earlier in the show today, you can get the unedited, uncensored version on ESPN and then the cleaned-up version on ESPN2. They'll take out all that.
I guess you can watch either one because you're going to know,
yeah, you'll know what
word
says,
is said, and that way you can keep it PG with your kids. But I don't know. I mean, they got to obviously be interviewing Dennis Rodman, right?
Yeah, well, of course.
I mean,
I heard Carmen Electra is going to be in the documentary.
Well, of course
they talked to her. Why wouldn't they, right?
We got Justin Timberlake.
Is Oprah going to be in the documentary? Miss Chicago? Will she be in there?
Probably not.
Yeah. God, it was so fun. The 80s were such a fun time for basketball. And then you get into the 90s and it was like, oh, this is just the Bulls. You know,
yeah.
But one other point that the director was making in this interview that I was reading, he said, like, you know, if you just glossed over the six championships that the Bulls won, it's like, okay, yeah, they were so good, so dominant. They went to the finals 6 out of 8 years. In the 2 years, Jordan was either not on the team or was on the team part time when he came back. they said, so he just missed a breeze through the East like LeBron did. And, you know, but that wasn't true. There were some really good teams in the East and there were some really good battles, and they're going to really showcase that in the documentary, kind of reminding you, hey, you know what? It wasn't just a cakewalk for this team. They were really good. Yeah. But they had, there were some roadblocks. The Jordan's dislike for Isaiah Thomas is going to be there. But when you look back in the, like the 80s, for example, when you had the Lakers and the Celtics, you just couldn't help but feel like the Bulls were good. You know, like that was a guy that you just weren't going to suppress. Like he was not going to be one of those athletes that was really good on top of his game, but darn it, just never found his way to the championship. You know, one of those type of players. He was not going to be that way. If you like the, if you were a big Celtics fan in the 80s, you felt there were two teams that were going to emerge to dethrone you, and that was either the Pistons, which eventually they did, or the Bulls. That one day the Bulls were just going to get it right. That this guy was too good to be left out of the conversation as the Eastern Conference's best teams. He was going to put it together, and he was going to take the team to the next level. And eventually, obviously, he did, but it was just a matter of time. Whereas in the West, You had a Rockets team that would kind of pop up, but there wasn't really anybody else in the 80s that the Lakers were, you know, it was just the Lakers. It was just a Laker decade for the Western Conference. And I think it was the Trailblazers toward the end with, you know, Clyde Drexler and whatnot. But for, you know, think about the 90s, the first championship Michael wins is against the Lakers, right? But the Celtics, you always felt like one of these days, this kid's going to put it together. And when he does, look out, it's not going to be pretty. It's going to be good. And so I'm looking forward to the documentary. So 1 week, the NFL draft, it should be fun. Be like, can you hear me? Okay. Yeah. Did I get this right? Okay. Yeah. All right. Do we get it? Did they come in? Yeah, I think Chase Young, Washington Redskins. Yeah, did we get that right? Yeah, okay, that's what they said? Okay, cool. I hope it's better than that. But so I got two questions coming up for the draft. One, on your charges, do they stay put and get a quarterback dropped in their lap, or do you think they actually make a push to move up from six?
That's the million-dollar question right there.
Right?
Are they looking at the Dolphins? I couldn't tell you at all.
Because look, they did what you do as an organization when you already have a quarterback and you say, "Oh no, we love Tyrod Taylor. Yeah, we love him." Because
That can't be right.
Yeah, can't be right because you don't know how the draft is going to play out, right? So you sit at six and you got three guys on the board. You've got Joe Burrow, Tua Tagovailoa, and Justin Herbert. Okay, you know Burrow's going one, so now the chase is for the two other guys. You feel like you're comfortable at six going, look, Redskins are going to go with Chase Young. The Lions aren't going to draft a quarterback. The Giants aren't going to draft a quarterback. The Dolphins, if this just stays the way it is, the Dolphins are going to get their choice of the other two. We'll get the choice of the one that's remaining. But what you can't account for is somebody jumping into this mix and getting a Lions pick or a Giants pick and them getting a quarterback, and then the Dolphins take the quarterback, and then you're left with no quarterback. You know, so you've got to figure out what game you want to play a week from now if you're going with a young quarterback to build for the future. Because that's why you say all the things you want to say positively about Tyrod Taylor, because you don't want to say, well, obviously he's our quarterback now, but we do anticipate that being different after Thursday night. Yeah, you wouldn't say that. You would go, no, he's our guy. He's our guy until we say otherwise, which could be Thursday night. So that's what I'm wondering, how this is going to play out.
I honestly, if they have to take a quarterback in the first round. They have to.
I've looked at every mock draft I could, and
everyone has like
everybody.
Justin Herbert,
which, or Tua, depending on how that particular individual grades those two guys.
Yeah, which I'm a little nervous about because Oregon quarterbacks haven't fared too well in the NFL.
Joey Harrington, you didn't enjoy the Joey Harrington era of NFL greatness?
No.
And Marcus Mariota?
Marcus, I didn't mind so much.
He wasn't bad.
Marcus wasn't bad. You know, he just, even when he came in, you didn't really look at him and go, that's a franchise quarterback.
The thing, this has been the argument with Marcus Mariota is, in, you know, from Titans fans and whatnot, he wasn't a game-changing presence, right? And that's a tough thing to lay on a quarterback. You felt like the game, like you didn't have a quarterback that you could go, all right, but we have him.
We may be down 10, but we have him. Or we are better because he's our quarterback against them. Like, you never felt that way about Marcus Mariota. He did good things. He did not so good things like anybody else in this league. But he was, all right. Like, nobody felt that the Titans were a better team because Marcus Mariota was the quarterback. You never felt the organization turn the corner. No, they weren't 2-14 bad. But I'm talking about, are we now consistently winning 10-plus games every year to put ourselves in position to be in the playoffs and make a run in the playoffs? And you never felt that way. And it was the same way with Jameis Winston. Like, we talk about Winston all the time. The good is the great, can be great. The bad can be awful. But you never felt like you had an advantage in a game because your quarterback was Jameis Winston or Marcus Mariota. And that was the difference. Whereas that's what you want. You want to feel like that position is in. You never want to feel like the quarterback needs to keep proving himself over and over again 3 or 4 years into the league. You want to feel like, nope, we've got the guy. You know, Blake Bortles was never the guy. That division had Blake Bortles, Brock Osweiler, Andrew Luck, and Marcus Mariota at one point. And at one point, you would look at and go, a young Blake Bortles, got it. A young Andrew Luck, absolutely. Young Marcus Mariota, a lot of promise. Brock Osweiler, oh, yeah, well, he's coming from Denver. He should be great, too. Well, look where we are today. Look where we are today. That wasn't that long ago. I mean, how long ago were people making the argument that the AFC South collection of quarterbacks were pretty decent young guys based on potential? 4 or 5 years ago? 4 years ago? Right? Look where we are now. No Andrew Luck in the league due to retirement. Marcus Mariota is now a Raider. Brock Osweiler is home on his couch. And Blake Bortles is... Who's Blake Bortles with again? Who did he land with as a backup? Where did he go? I don't even know.
Rams,
that's right. Right? I mean, he's not in the league anymore. You
know? You know, so, is that a slam against him or the Rams?
Or the Rams.
Yeah, they're so not an NFL team anymore.
So there you go. Right? It's that quick. It's that. But outside of Luck, none of those teams with those guys that were, you know, talked about. I mean, my friend Frank Schwab and I were talking at a segment once on this, and we both said, look, the potential for this division is great for quarterbacks, right? The sky is the limit with these guys, young guys, high draft picks. Oh, yeah. Nope. Didn't work out, right? Never felt comfortable. Outside of Luck, never felt comfortable that you had the right guy in place. So in this particular case, in this draft, yeah, I mean, if you're the Chargers, and there's three guys here that are supposedly the franchise-changing quarterback presence, if you're going to come away with one, you better be paying attention, and your spies better be accurate about what other teams are doing. Because the Dolphins could be packaging up a nice deal. They've got three first-rounders. Now, they don't have to move at all, to be honest with you. What they're worried about is the Chargers. They're worried about somebody else that may be looking to make a change at quarterback. To move up in one of these drafts. I mean, who else? Hey, you look down the list. I don't see very many people ready to make a bit, you know, put together a huge package to jump in to grab one of those two guys. But I'm sure the Dolphins are like, look, we've got three first round picks watching the Chargers. If we're set on Tua, then we better be careful. Cause if the Chargers want to move up, what could they offer the Lions or the Giants to get ahead of us? And this might be one of those situations where if you're the Giants or the Lions, sit back and enjoy the fight for one of those quarterbacks and listen to both of these teams nervous about how which one of us is going to be able to pick ahead of the other guy. Like, if you're the Lions, you may want Jeff Okuda completely. He's one of the best corners. He's top corner you can get, right? Or Isaiah Simmons or somebody like that the Giants might grab. But sit back and enjoy the fight between the Dolphins and the Chargers if, indeed, Tua or Justin Herbert is the clear choice over the other guy. Because that's going to be an interesting conversation on the phone. What will either one of them get to make sure they hold off the other guy? The Dolphins are like, well, we don't have to move, but we better move if the Chargers are on the other line. So the Chargers are like, well, we don't have a choice. We've got to move up if we want one of the, you know, You know, let's say, you know, Tua's hip injury is a big concern or whatever. Or Tua's absolutely the guy based on the video. You're the Chargers, start figuring out a package deal. Or maybe they just like Herbert and we'll say, we'll take him when Tua goes to the Dolphins. We'll see. Now, remember, most of these trade scenarios we keep bringing up never come to fruition. You know, it's always like, well, we think this team is going to be moving up, packaging a deal. This should happen. It seems clear. And you go, man, then you get to draft day. And sure enough, Goodell reads off the pick of the team. You're like, oh, okay. Well, I guess nobody was interested in making that deal. Who knows what was going on, but this is the way it landed. All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb. That's coming up in about 15 minutes. You don't want to miss that. If you want to hit us up on Twitter, love to hear from you, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. All right, coming up, I watched this 30 for 30 doc that I've been wanting to see again, a repeat for a long time. Finally did it last night. Great story, a cautious tale of college athletics. It's next. It's SB Nation AM. Wake up call.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
It is 1987 Throwback Thursday. Michael Jordan, 3,000 points in the season, second NBA player in history to do that at that time. Yeah, it's 33 years ago. Good stuff, 1987. I've liked every song you've played so far. This has been pretty awesome.
No problem.
Hey, when your battery goes dead, everything to come to a stop. Don't take a chance getting stranded. O'Reilly Auto Parts will test your battery free of charge. If your battery needs to be replaced, O'Reilly Auto Parts can help you find the exact battery that fits your car or truck at a guaranteed low price. Make sure your vehicle is prepared for the weather ahead. Getting your battery tested for free at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. So I was perusing the 30 for 30 library yesterday because that's what I want to do in quarantine. And I came upon one that I went, oh my God, I wanted to see this again. And I'm going to now grab my dinner. I'm going to sit and watch this. It was Pony Excess. It was the story of the SMU football team from the 80s that got put on the death penalty. And the reason I wanted to see it, it's one of my favorite documentaries. It's one of my favorite 30 for 30s is because I like the way it's shot and I like the way it plays itself out. It's quick. There's a lot of media members in it, from guys on the ticket, from guys who are covering sports at the time, the two newspapers. Skip Bayless is in it from his time when he was in Dallas. And it's just like quote after quote after quote after quote after quote on how SMU dominated the college football landscape for a period of time and then went into this period of the death penalty. And it's a cautionary tale of what can happen to a program when it does get the death penalty because they did not play in the 1987 season, and then they really have never been good since. And so I like it because it's just this great story arc about how a program can be part of a system where, so SMU is this program that's in the Southwestern Conference, which is one of the dominating conferences of college football at the time. Texas A&M, Baylor, Rice, Houston, Arkansas, you've got Texas Tech, right? Some of the best football is being played there. SMU is trying to get in the running, and it's the early 80s, and it's Dallas, and it is, the city is flooded with money. And so you have all these boosters that know how the game is played. They know how recruiting works. So they're going to these, they're doing it like anybody else is doing. Everybody else is doing it. They're doing it just like Texas A&M, everybody else. They're offering kids money to go play, right? And they're doing it, you know, in a grandiose style with a coach in Ron Meyer that loves recruiting. Big recruiter, loves hitting the road, got private planes from boosters to go hit these schools around the state. It was when, so the NCAA is paying attention because they're good. They're starting to get good, and they got good quickly. Now, if you're the NCAA, you know how a team goes from okay to good quickly. You know, you have your suspicions. But what the documentary points out is once SMU, who started really hitting the state, I mean, they were going all over. They were going to Texas territory, Texas A&M territory. They grabbed Eric Dickerson from Texas A&M territory. They got Craig James. But when they started recruiting into Pennsylvania, Michigan, Ohio, those programs went, oh, no, 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 no. We're not, no. We're not having SMU show up. And they were the ones that started to tell the NCAA, you better start paying attention to this school. Like they're showing up at our high schools here in our state, and there's something going on. Like, there's something going on. And sure enough, they look into the program, and they find the dirt. They find, you know, just money and whatnot. And what SMU was doing was SMU had a payroll, right? So they were paying players monthly to come. It was like, you're a salaried employee. You work for the school playing football. So the NCAA hits them with sanctions, right? The first time they get hit and they get no scholarships, no TV, bowl ban, right? So the year that they get the bowl ban, they win the Southwestern Conference. Yeah, they win it outright, but they don't get to go to a bowl. So they get hit. So there's this rule in place that if you get hit with these violations within a 5-year period, you get the death penalty. But nobody ever thought that a school would actually get the death penalty, because football, as we've been saying over and over again, is so important to the economics of an institution. Nobody ever thought it would happen. So SMU says, we won't be doing it again. We're going to clean up the program. But here was the problem. The problem was they had guys on the payroll. And they're really nervous because, if you know, when you are a recruit and you receive money from a booster, the person that's in danger is the booster. And because he loves his program, he doesn't love you, he loves his program. So the booster can get his school in trouble, whereas the student athlete doesn't get in trouble. So the student athlete has the leverage over the booster and the school when he accepts money. This isn't like a two-way street. You know, if a criminal comes to my house with a bag of money, gives it to me to launder, and I launder the money, we're both in trouble, right? But that's not the way the NCAA saw students getting money. They saw the school was the problem, but the student athlete was just an innocent poor kid that was just taking money. So the student always had the leverage. So the school was in this weird position. They were like, well, we have to keep paying. We have to keep paying the players, because if we don't, they'll rat us out, and then, you know, we'll get the death penalty. So if we can do it quietly, if we can continue to do it quietly and nobody blows the whistle, we can get through this current recruiting class. When they're out and they've graduated, then we won't have anybody else on the books and we're good. That was the problem. A guy squealed, and Dallas News got a hold of it, and, you know, they ran the story, and the NCAA comes down with the death penalty, and they canceled the program for 1 year. The school then canceled it for another year, and they were 2 years out, and they haven't recovered. And it's not only that they haven't recovered, is if you know the landscape of college football, it's one of the marks. It's one of the deciding factors in the dissolvement of the Southwestern Conference. Arkansas went on to play in the SEC. Texas A&M at that time moved on, and Baylor and Texas Tech moved on to form the Big 12, joined with the Big 8, became the Big 12. It was a disillusion of, you know, Houston and Rice went on to their separate conferences. SMU went to another conference because SMU was terrible. They had a football team of undersized players. They were getting beat. Houston beat them like 95 to something and put almost 100 points on the board back in the 80s, and they never recovered. And so, like, Dickerson and James and David Richards and guys who went on to the NFL were always saying, like, man, it's terrible that the school was irrelevant for 20 years. But those guys never got invited back to the school. They never got welcomed back to the program because they were a reminder of the dark times. And it wasn't until recently, within a 5-year period or so, that they finally told those guys, no, you need to come back to the SMU family. You need to be welcomed here. You need to be treated as heroes. You guys, you know, may not have won a national title, but you should have. You may not have won the conference title the year we're on probation, but you should have. Your records and your marks are really important. It is a well-done documentary that moves quick. I mean, it moves. They don't spend a lot of time lingering on issues. A lot of audio.
You mean
a lot of
people
talking?
They didn't turn it into a 10-episode.
Yeah,
event?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Could've.
I mean, you've got like. You know, again, Skip Bayless, you've got Richard Justice is in it, you've got Randy Galloway, you've got all these Dallas media types, and they're all talking about what it was like. They're all talking about, and then this happened. Dale Hansen on Channel 8, bam, 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 bam. One after another, after another, after another, another, talking about that program. It is a great, great series on the dangers of what can happen to a program when they cancel it all.
Wake Up Call continues now.
starts now.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, and the dumb here on a Throwback Thursday. What is the good of the day, my friend?
Well, yesterday, you know how we talked about the all-in challenge?
Yes, I like that.
And how that's probably going to raise, you know, their goal was to raise $10 million, but it's probably going to raise hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Because I think it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. Along those same lines, there's a British World War II vet who celebrated his 100th birthday this past week.
Okay.
By raising $10 million for COVID-19 relief.
How did he do that?
His name is Tom Moore, and he rose to the rank of Army Captain while serving in British-ruled India and Burma, right? He said he set out to walk 100 laps of his back garden.
Nice.
Which is around in Bedfordshire, which is around 50 miles northwest of London.
And he's 100 years old.
100 years old. His original fundraising target was $1,250.
Wow.
But this little video he had or whatever it went viral. The site crashed at one point, and he ended up raising £9,790,623, which puts it close to around $10 million, American dollars.
That's amazing to me. That is unbelievable.
So
that is great.
If he can do it by himself, just raising $10 million, and this all-in challenge better break some records.
Yeah, no kidding.
Which, I mean, all it was, he said, is just do some laps around his back garden. And everyone was just started, let's chip in. It was almost as if they were wanting an excuse to just donate.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you know what else is, too, is that people want to donate. I know, you know, you donate to something and then you hear later, oh God, that none of the money went to the thing and went to, you know, but people want to attach the donation to something, all right, that feels pretty good, like something like that, rather than just saying, here's an organization, here's money. They go, no, the money is going to this, but I want to support this guy doing that or that guy doing it or whatever. This all-in challenge, like, yeah, there should be millionaires, hedge fund managers, guys who, you know, have a lot of money who go, you know what, Peyton Manning, $10 million to play golf with you and have dinner.
Yep.
Like, I'm just going to pay $10 million to do that. Like, you know, whatever, because this is the good part of this horrible pandemic is keep seeing stories like that rather than an old couple got raided by a bunch of bandits for their food. You know, and left starving. Like, no, it's we're raising money. A guy walking laps around his garden raised $10 million. That's great. That is a great story.
Just by himself. That's what I love. It's just, I mean, something so simple. I'm just going to take laps around my backyard because he's 100 years old. I guess he had a hip replacement surgery, so he has a walker. And
it's amazing. Simple. It's amazing how quick things go viral, right? I mean, it's how fast. A lot of it for the good, right? A lot of it's good like that, where he goes, yeah, I want to raise $1,000 and ends up going viral around the world. It raises $10 million. And remember, you know, or bad, like that woman that made that racist comment before she went to South Africa. Remember, she went on the plane, tweeted out that thing. By the time she landed, she was fired. Remember that? And it had traveled the world twice or something like that. It was everywhere.
Yep.
People were monitoring her plane. So
lynch her when she gets off.
Exactly. But you get a lot of these stories where it's like some kid is like, you hear a story like, here's a little boy, he's selling lemonade for his mom who lost. And next thing you know, there's like a line 5 miles down the road of people who want to buy lemonade for this little boy who's raising money for his mom or something. It's awesome.
I think what it is, I mean, there's just people just want to donate right now, whether it's time, blood, sweat, tears, it doesn't really matter. People would just want to donate right now. But I think they're tired of, well, okay, you know, I don't really know where the money goes to this fund. Or, you know, yeah, we can give to the Red Cross, but Red Cross won't use it just for this. They spread it out over many, many, you know, issues going
on. Exactly, exactly.
And I just want to donate to COVID-19. And this is an avenue. All the proceeds that he raised, all the money he raised went to England has a public health care system.
Yeah, great.
And so it went to that.
Good. That's awesome. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I thought it was.
That is awesome.
By himself.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Come on, all-in challenge.
All right, what's the bad of the day?
I was hesitant on bringing this up.
Okay.
But
I like those.
Yeah. I mean, I know you saw it too. Jay Glazer.
Yes, I saw this yesterday.
He had teased all week long that he had some big NFL breaking news.
Right.
And that he was going to reveal it on Wednesday night. You know, on Fox Sports 1 or whatever. I don't know. I don't even know what show it was. And so, I mean, there was a lot of speculation.
Sure.
You know, and a lot of people are thinking, okay, does it have to do with the NFL schedule? Are there issues with the draft? It was going to be huge breaking news. And the breaking news is that Rams center, he's the center for the Rams, Brian Allen is the first known player in the NFL to have the coronavirus.
Right.
I just felt that that was kind of dumb.
No,
I mean,
that
it was just kind of bad. I mean, it's, you know, it was almost as if he was taking advantage of a situation purely to boost his clicks.
Yeah, and that's a problem. I didn't like that either because, again, you are teasing a public that is desperate for other things than coronavirus news.
Yeah.
And they're anticipating something that they can digest that is not about this virus all the time. And then you give them coronavirus news.
Right.
Which is like, and the other thing too is, okay, so you're a football fan. Again, it's news that you want to argue with your friends or make a post and or tweet something about or say this is dumb or this is smart or this is brilliant or whatever it is, however you want to have a take on that bit of news. But you can't, what take is this? Hope you get better, Brian. Hope you recover. Well,
I mean, honestly,
that's all I got.
Yeah. The only other thing that was happening was, I mean, Twitter just had a field day slamming Jay Glazer left and right.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there, it's like, good. You know, it's terrible. It's like, I don't blame him.
Good.
You know, I mean, we're hoping it's like, oh, do you have the scoop on a big trade going down? I mean, draft is a week away. What, you know, is, you know, did the Dolphins move up? Is Joe Burrow dead set on not wanting to be a Bengal? I mean,
that's what I was wondering.
Everything,
right?
we're speculating everything because we're getting to the point where it's going to be crazy time.
Right. Because any day now, you brought up Burrow, any day now could be Burrow camp finally breaks silence. They will not play for Cincinnati, right? Or whatever it is, right?
Exactly.
Like if they're going to make the Eli Manning move, the next couple of days is when you're going to start hearing it. If there was any truth to what we had heard a couple of months ago, right after the college football season,
yep.
where everybody was like, I don't think he wants to play for the Bengals. Is he want to play for the Bengals? I don't think he wants to play for the Bengals. And we kind of let that stew in the pot for a bit, and then we were like, maybe we just are creating something out of nothing. Maybe, you know, this is not a non-story. Well, there are people who believe that there was something there. It may be microscopic, but there are people who think that there was something there. If there was something there, the next couple of days is when you're going to hear it. So, yeah, it would be reasonable to think that that was something that Jay Glazer was going to break, that he heard it from a really good source that the Burrow camp is going to make a demand to the Bengals. Trade, either don't pick us or trade that pick because we will not sign with you.
I know. I thought it was
coronavirus out, you know, testing player.
Player tested positive coronavirus. I mean, what? Why hold on to that information? What does it do? What does it serve for you? Except, you know, you had breaking news that you were going to, that you held on to. I mean, literally held on to it for like 2 to 3 days and kept teasing about it.
Sad. It's sad that they live in that, you know, again, we all live in the click world. We all live in the ratings world. We need numbers. I get it. But my God, the length some of these guys will go to just to accomplish that, it's got to be a mind-numbing existence.
But it's just got to stop. I mean, it'd be better. I mean, I guess if we didn't click on it, or if we didn't care.
Yeah.
But we can't. We can't as a society not care because we honestly thought it could be anything.
Before you get to the dumb, the perfect example of that is when both Adam Schefter and Glazer and a couple of other guys felt the need for many years to tell us who a team was picking before the announcement of the draft. Nobody I knew liked that. Nobody. I had never heard a caller, somebody in the hallways of a radio station I worked at, fans, buddies, whatever. Nobody liked it. Yeah. They wanted it to be the Oscars. They wanted it to be the Academy Awards, whatever. They wanted the commissioner to tell them in a big announcement.
To that same point, and which is probably how he rose to such fame was Adrian Wojnarowski.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, there's been a couple of drafts. There was a couple of drafts. Now it's him and Shams Charania both are like neck and neck doing this. But for years, Woj had every single draft pick before the draft was announced.
Yeah.
Before that pick was announced. And it was just Woj bomb after Woj bomb after Woj bomb. Just, you know, yeah, we've kind of grown accustomed. Like, let's just be the award show atmosphere that they're trying to be.
And those guys thought, well, this is what I do.
Yeah, right?
This is what I have to do. I know people hate it, but I'm not gonna not do it so that somebody else does it.
But at least with them, they're giving us news right then and there. They're not teasing.
They're not teasing it, right?
You know, a couple of days ahead of time. That's what I just couldn't get past, was just the teasing a couple of days ahead of time. It's like, come on, you don't need to. That's not news.
Good. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. That's a good bad for the good, the bad, and the dumb. Speaking of dumb, what's the dumb of the
day? Let's turn it around, huh?
Let's flip it over.
Game show fails.
Oh,
we have
here we go.
Two of them.
Yeah, I heard about this one.
Which one?
Well, the Jeopardy one.
The Jeopardy one?
Well,
that's
the big news.
Yeah, let's hear it. Let's listen to it. This what happened yesterday. Yesterday was there was somewhat of an important day yesterday. It was Jackie Robinson Day, and here's what the contestant had to face.
One of the topics covered in a Major League Baseball course at Arizona State is this player who broke the color barrier in 1947. Chauka.
Who is Babe Ruth?
Nope.
Babe
Nathaniel.
Ruth.
Who is Jackie Robinson?
Yes.
Yeah, Babe
thank
Ruth.
God it's, the guy knew. Now, let's preface this for a little bit.
Some man came in and rescued the Jeopardy segment.
I'm going to preface this for a second. This is, you know, it's college week on Jeopardy.
Right, right.
But, I mean, I don't know. I would think everyone would know Jackie Robinson. And I don't want to put myself in a bubble.
Okay.
You know, in that bubble. But
right. I got it. But here's the deal. I thought everybody knew Babe Ruth was white.
Well, maybe not. There is that conspiracy theory.
Well, it's true, but I mean, I guess.
Yeah, no, I would have thought the same thing.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Okay, like she may go, I don't know the answer to this, but I know it's not Babe Ruth.
She literally clicked that button and just named off the only baseball player she knows.
That's exactly right. But no,
she did go on to win that game yesterday.
Quick question before you get to the other one, because I know we're short on time, but quick question. Do you blame them? Because sometimes you just go, I just got to punch in. I just got to punch in and just take my chance.
I'm sure they all do that.
Jeopardy. Like I got to, the buzzer has to buzz, because I've been told by my brother-in-law, they said to him when he was on Jeopardy, they said that, you have to press it at a certain, the moment you press it, like if you press it a microsecond before, that's it. Like, so you're better off. You can't buzz in before the question is finished, so you have to time it. So as soon as he's done with the question, you got to hit it. Otherwise, you get locked out. But if you press it before Alex Trebek, if you press it before he finishes the question, you get locked out too. So you have to time it. So there's a nervousness of, am I going to get this in on time? You know, am I going to get this in? No. Oh, shoot, I don't even know that answer. God, what am I doing?
I know.
Right? And then you panic and you say Babe Ruth.
Babe Ruth.
All right, what's the second one?
The second one, unfortunately, I saw audio. It wasn't great audio. There was a guy talking over the audio. He was like filming his TV and talking over it. So I didn't want to use that one. I was trying to find an original one, but I couldn't.
Okay.
But this one involves the Price is Right contestant.
Awesome.
Who won the Showcase Showdown.
Awesome.
You know what the big prize was? Because obviously this was filmed months ago.
Months ago.
The big prize, a trip for himself and three others to... the Stanley Cup Final.
Oh, well done. Price is Right. Oh, got to grab that and got to offer him something else, like a big TV and a lifetime supply of Netflix.
And I'm looking at it. It's a young guy.
Oh.
There's not a doubt in my mind that he didn't go money option on this one.
Yeah,
that he
right.
was like, me?
No.
A trip for me and three of my buds to whatever city, the Stanley Cup Final, you know, hotels paid for, airfares paid for. I'm in. You know, me and three of my friends, we're going to have a great time whatever night that's going to be.
That's hilarious. That is hilarious. All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb. We're on a Throwback Thursday. Wake up call, SB Nation Radio.
It
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
1987 Throwback Thursday, back at that high school gym where nobody's dancing. Go ask Sheila from calculus class to dance. Just sitting there.
No.
No? Don't you like Danielle? You should go ask her.
I like being a wallflower.
I want to be. I'm just standing here with my buddies. Look at look how pretty Stacy looks in her shirt and her poofy hair. Don't you want to go over there and ask her to? Nope. No, I'll just stand right here.
I love how they always show it in TVs and movies. Like the girls are sitting there just itching to for someone to come over.
Dying.
And their feet are tapping, and guys are sitting there, you know, looking the other way.
Yeah, exactly.
Looking up at the rafters.
Yep. Just want to be like. All right, this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Real quick, Billy McFarland of Fire Festival fame, the guy that conned all those people in the Fire Festival.
Gave out great sandwiches.
Yeah, that's right. The great cheese sandwiches and the soggy mattresses and the FEMA tents for his big music festival. He's once out of prison because of coronavirus. He says he's in a low-security prison in Ohio, but they're all gathered in one general room, and a lot of the inmates there have already got coronavirus. So he's like, I'm kind of, can we be done with this prison thing? Wire fraud and all that?
Couldn't he organize
a
better place for him?
Yeah, can't Ja Rule get him out of there? Doesn't Ja Rule have any pull to get Billy McFarland out of prison so he can... They'll be like, I have a great idea to help with the coronavirus release. We'll have a festival on it. No, you will not. No.
I know an island you can put us on.
I know, yeah. Pablo Escobar's island, I think.